Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Slash Filmcast After Dark, the after show where we talk about a variety of random topics that did not make it into the main show. Thanks to all the fine folks at patreon.com/filmpodcast for making this part of the show possible.
Thank you.
You are who we're doing this After Dark for, and we've had a lot of fun doing these episodes, and we are very grateful that we get to do them.
Yes.
Thanks to all the folks at patreon.com/filmpodcast.
You're the best.
Today, we're going to be doing a spoiler special on Search Party. Now, we've already talked a lot about Search Party during the main show, so I think you all know that this is a show we recommend. It's streaming right now on HBO Max, seasons 1-4. It's been renewed for season 5.
And 6. You got renewed for 2 seasons.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. I watched the entire series in the last month.
Yeah. We binged it too. If you haven't watched it and you're even remotely interested, don't let us spoil it for you. Go in blind. Mm-hmm. Just watch it.
One thing I will say that may convince people, if you want the high of Breaking Bad, the high of people getting into situations where you're like, how the fuck do they get out of this? This show will really get you there.
Now, I have to say, real quick, Dave, I have gotten a number of people on Twitter who have said to me, I've heard you guys talk about the show and I tried to watch it and I just hate these people.
Yep.
And
that's the point.
I understand that. I agree. That's the point.
That is.
You will watch them go through hell, and that's the fun. But also, you don't have to like it. Understand if you just can't stand the narcissism of these people, you can move on. But if you understand that is the point, I think you will enjoy it quite a lot.
So, let's talk about, I would not compare this to Breaking Bad. I'm going to put that out there in terms of like how good the show is.
I just did, but please tell me.
I think there's the way I would capture what I like about the show is like what Jeff alluded to in some of his earlier reviews on the podcast of like how this show will take a premise that you're just like, there's no way it's going to continue on with this premise. Mm-hmm. And like just take it all the way to its logical extreme in ways that I just have to admire. I admire the audacity of it.
Yeah. Almost like everyday people getting into precarious and violent situations, almost like Breaking Bad.
I will say, I think the show was a lot more fun, like haha funny in season one.
Yes. It got darker.
And it got way, way, way dark. And there's still like many still moments of humor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's not like it's a complete slog or anything like that. But like season one, I thought, oh, what a delightful little
romp around New York.
Confection.
Let's find this missing girl.
Yeah, a little confection there. Like what a delight. And then seasons 2-4, they really started reaching. They were really, really ambitious in what they were attempting.
I think season 2, like at the end of season 1, I don't know if how much far they planned this out.
Right.
But I do wonder if I feel like in this show, they get to these points where they're like, well, you know, they could just say it's self-defense. That would be the accurate thing. And we're in spoiler territory now.
Yeah. Right? So let's say right now, we're going to spoil the entire series of Search Party, seasons 1-4, streaming right now on HBO Max, starting now. So if you don't want to be spoiled, then come back. Come back later. Yeah.
So when they kill the guy at the end of season 1, the obvious response, I think, realistically for a lot of people would be like, he was literally trying to kill me. I have witnesses. He was trying to kill me. This is self-defense. It looks really bad, but it's self-defense. The show would have, that's it. You know, that would have been season 2. It would have been wrapped up pretty quickly. But no, they don't. They respond to things in very strange ways, I think.
Well, like movies, like joy. Movie characters or TV show characters. Yeah. And then it's like, and then the show goes, well, if someone actually did this,
yes,
what would the ramifications be? That's what I love. It's like, it's a total wacky comedy premise. It's like, oh, we'll shove him in the duffel bag and we'll bring him out to the woods. And it's like, no, but what if you did? You know, like, what
are the consequences?
Really be like? Yeah. It's so good. And the other thing, kind of underscoring what you were saying, Dave, is I love this show because season 4 is so far away from what season 1 was.
Yes.
It's like full circle.
It's a completely different stratosphere of show. And the feel like there's connective tissue that got from there to there. You know, it's so wild.
Go ahead, Devendra.
I do think, like, so season four is such a change, right? Because it's Dory in prison, but it's also, I love that it comes full circle, right? Now they're searching for her. She's searching for herself in a way, but it all means something too. Like, I think that's what I really dig about this, because a lot of shows with high concepts that kind of, you know, they build themselves up into situations that kind of fall apart. We've seen several HBO shows that couldn't even stand a single season of like a high concept kind of crime thriller type of thing, and they just keep one-upping themselves. I think that's what constantly astounds me about Search Party.
It's true. It's astounding how it gets to a place. I don't know how, I mean, are you planning, Dave, to step through from beginning to end, or can we just pluck out favorite things?
Yeah.
From...
What do you guys want to do? You want to walk through each season? Why don't we do that? But yeah, you can feel free to cherry pick, Jeff. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to reference one of my favorite sequences of the entire series, which is in season four, which is the costumed mistaken identity payoff that is so exquisitely set up. And it's almost like an Arrested Development moment where
go ahead. Yep.
No, go. You can.
What are you referring to specifically, Jeff?
So you have the psychotic kidnapper dressed up like his own aunt, who is Susan Sarandon.
Right.
What's her name in the show? Maybe
Dory.
Dory. You have Dory dressed up like an old woman as well. You have the friend dressed up like Dory because she's playing Dory in a movie about Dory.
Yeah.
And you have them all in different cars.
That
chasing
whole episode.
Each other.
That it's whole just episode. Oh,
a work
man.
Of genius because, I mean, it's a thing that I have lauded over and over and over on the show, which is setups that don't feel like setups. Mm-hmm, like the payoff for that is so satisfying when everybody thinks that they're everybody else and everybody looks like everybody else and everybody's chasing everybody else. And we get to that roundabout where they're just chasing each other in a roundabout. It is so satisfying, that payoff. But every step of the way, everything that is a setup for that is a payoff itself, right? Everything that's a setup, like the notion of, I should look up all the names of the characters, the blonde playing Dory.
Portia
playing Dory in the movie about Dory is such a like perfect distillation of everything about these characters. Like her narcissism, her naked ambition to be an actor of note makes her completely betray her friend on every level, right? And actually kind of sully herself, you know, like the idea that you would play your friend who just got acquitted for murder in the story that you were involved in and you testified again, like that all is a payoff in and of itself. It's an incredible turn that just feels so right for those characters and says something in and of itself, is funny in and of itself, but also is a setup for the fact that people are searching for Dory. She looks like Dory. They're driving around trying to find Dory. There's someone in the car that looks like Dory. It's so brilliant. And there's like a half a dozen moments in the show where I'm like, this is the most brilliant payoff that we could have gotten of this. It's really a cool show, man. We loved it.
I feel like they keep writing themselves into these situations too, where it's like, we're just going to do the hardest thing, right? We're not going to do the easiest thing. I think the thing basically was at the end of season two, right? Is that when Dory kills the neighbor?
Yeah.
Where I was just like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
What else can you do?
Or
what else can she do to get herself out of the situation? Yeah. But also that tells you so much about her at this point too. Yeah.
The show turns the screws, right? We set up the guy. Like, this is what movies do. Movies set up the guy that is killed by the heroes as being a despicable dude, right? And so we as the audience are off the hook in rooting for our heroes to get away with it. This show goes, oh, guess what? He had a daughter that really loved him. Yeah. She really loved him a lot. And she's wondering where he is. And he had an ex-wife who's not that bad of a person either. And they're all wondering where he, like, he was a bad guy, but there's a lot of people that really loved him in the world. And so how do you feel about that now? And like, I love that the show doesn't let you, the viewer, off the hook. It doesn't let its characters off the hook. It's constantly making it more difficult, turning the screws on them, making them worse, making the situation worse, harder, digging the hole deeper. It's so bold in that way.
Yeah, I completely agree with all that. I think when I think back on the most inventive parts of the show, I think the tone of the show is a little bit all over the place, but that leads to some really interesting stuff. Like, for instance, mm-hmm. the neighbor having a twin sister that's the complete opposite personality.
That revelation. Yes. Oh, man.
And it's just like, wow, that's incredible. And Elliot Goss's family, you know, that whole deal, and his parents, and you know,
that they were actors, and he like his constant lying is so well done.
Yeah,
and he is great, by the way.
My favorite
that actor is phenomenal.
Favorite character, is Elliot Goss.
But also, the murder is all his fault, basically. Literally all his.
Why do you say that?
It was his response. It was like, oh, guess we got to bury it because that's what you do in situations like this. Don't listen to the serial liar. When you're faced with a dead body, people, come on.
Yeah.
So let's just talk about each of the seasons individually. I mm-hmm. think that this is a show that we saw kind of find its footing. Because I think season one, they were still trying to... They clearly had a beginning point and an end point, right? Yep. Like, I think they understood where it was building towards. But I think season four, it feels like this is a show that... is pretty much firing on all cylinders. It's knowing exactly what it's trying to do. It's like planned out from the beginning.
Super confident, right?
Yeah. And season one through three, a little less certain, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But season one is largely about this quest for Chantal. And I'm curious, like, what do you guys think this show is trying to say? Because to me, if I'm to derive any message from this show, it's this kind of, when you dig down into the second level of a millennial's psyche, you find nothing but nihilism, right? Like, that's kind of
it's selfishness, my interpretation, right? Yeah, complete narcissism and selfishness.
There's no there. You're hoping to find a human with hopes and dreams, and you find just nothing. And
yeah, I mean, Dory's raison d'etre is like just this emptiness from a lack of purpose.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. She just is purposeless, and so she keeps trying to fill that hole with purpose, regardless of where it sits on the moral spectrum.
I agree. And her kind of failure to do that, that was some of the funniest stuff of season one. Like, all the Chantal stuff, like going to the memorial, the vigil and stuff like that. I just loved all that. It was just, each of the episodes were like 20 minutes long.
Griffin Newman in there, by the way.
Griffin Newman's knocking it out of the park, dude. Yeah. Creepy and weird and funny. That scene where he goes to dinner with them is so good.
Ugh. I loved all that. And even though I think latter seasons and like season four just is so bold, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I admire it so much. But I think like probably season one is the one I got like the most enjoyment out of, just in terms of like laughs.
Yeah. In terms of, it is the funniest season because I also feel like they were trying to figure out like what they were trying to do. But it's also, I fell off originally midway through season one because like, hey, I get it. I see what they're going for here. I don't care enough about this mystery to keep going, but I'm glad I, you know, gave it another shot.
I don't know, dude. Isn't it season three that has the whole wedding and like all of that stuff is so funny.
The
wedding planners, the just base shamelessness of the commercialism of the wedding, how it's all
season three has some so great characters. Funny.
Season three is a trial too.
I loved Shalita Grant as the lawyer because I've not
she's
seen
so
her.
Good.
She's
yes.
incredible. Yeah. Yeah.
And the prosecutor.
Just incredulous that anyone could believe these fucking kids, you know? It's like, oh, it's so great.
That is
so
boomers good. Looking at every millennial and being like, I hate you.
Yeah. How do you even look at these kids and not know they're guilty immediately? You know, it's so great. And it's great because she's right. You know, she's right. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, Shalita Grant is awesome. I also loved Michaela Watkins as the prosecutor, mm-hmm. kind of like a Marsha Clark style person who's trying to do the right thing. But all those courtroom scenes I thought were really, really funny. Yeah. And the thing that I thought was so hilarious
freaking
was
Louis
like,
Anderson, dude? Come on.
Louis Anderson, like, forgetting his client's name.
So good. That's so
really,
good.
Really good stuff.
By the way, we have not talked about, like, much of what happened with Chantal. And I have to say, one of the triumphs of this show is absolutely making you hate Chantal.
Yes.
Chantal's you spend the worst. Entire season
yes.
trying
Chantal's
to get to her.
Yeah.
And she
yeah.
ruins her family. And you spend an entire episode reconciling with how she ruined her family to you, and she doesn't care. Amazing. Amazing stuff.
Yeah. And an amazing cameo from Wallace Shawn. Yeah. I love seeing him anytime yeah. I see him.
I mean, I will say you guys love the show. I love the show. I would recommend the show, but I'm not quite as rapturous as you guys as usual. I mean, there were some things where I thought the show kind of was struggled a little bit to find its footing on occasion. Like I think the Wallace Shawn Chantal stuff. Like basically anyone who's not the primary four characters, I think the show has had a little bit of a difficult time with. I think like Chantal. I agree that the show makes you hate her, but the whole Wallace Shawn thing, that felt a little bit half-baked to me. And also, I think the show kind of does Julian dirty a little bit. Like, there's nothing...
Oh, it totally does. It totally you know, does. It just completely, like, locks away its black characters after well, some point, between her and Cassidy. Yeah,
And I feel like Julian, I think he was introduced at the beginning to be the actual good person and at a certain point the show just like doesn't have any use for good people.
Yeah,
well it's not even about goodness. Like he's also an asshole. Like he is a strict rationalist in the way where he just can't tell any lies. He's just speaking the truth, right? Like that's all. But no, it's like it's all about like these character tics and how they kind of make them all the worst in different ways. I like Julian as a character though. Like every interaction he has with Drew I think is fantastic.
The first time that he gets that text from the chick from Succession, I was just like, what? Oh my God. Yeah, it's so funny. So funny.
Yeah.
Like, what do you do in that situation? It's so great.
Yeah. But, and then also in season four, the episodes become 10 minutes longer because they're now able to do that because they're on HBO Max. And I'm like, I don't know that it really benefited from that, to be honest with you. I felt like I loved how just tight the first three seasons were, you know, because they're like
they were certainly tight.
We have to do this in 22 minutes or less, and I think it creates a kind of discipline that I thought was a little bit absent.
I didn't feel it.
Yeah. I think by this season I was just like, yeah, give it hook it straight into my veins and give me more of it, please.
The thing about the show too was I felt like some of the seasons were really like sometimes the production value looked awesome and sometimes it looked very cheap, and I felt like there was a kind of it kind of swung between those two things. Like the wedding stuff, I was like, wow, they really made these massive banners of these guys that look incredible. And then other times it looks like, wow, they like struggled to get, you know, a full crew for this, it looks like. So it does kind of fluctuate a little bit, but what really sold the show for like really made me like a unbridled fan of the show is basically season four. There's this moment in season four when she's locked underground by Chip, right? And she wakes up in the felt version of her apartment.
It's nerfed. Completely nerfed.
I'm just like, this is genius. This is genius. Whoever came up with this is a genius.
Yeah.
And they set him up in the previous season. Like, it's...
Well, the thing about the previous season...
They knew what they were
going to
do.
Okay. Yeah. This is Dave Chen's thought process from season three, right? Was like, there is a flash forward... where Dory says, all right, you want to know the true story of how it happened? Here's how it happened. Yeah. And Dory goes to jail.
Yes.
Like, I fucking hate...
The biggest swerve.
I fucking hate flash forwards. That was my reaction. Fucking hate flash forwards.
Fucking hate them.
I'm like, you're giving away the ending. Story should start when they start. Like, why are we going halfway down the story with this flash forward? So we get to the trial and the verdict is about to be read. And I'm like, okay, like, why are you guys going down this whole path? We already know it's going to be guilty because we saw the flash forward. And then it was not guilty.
The show was like, gotcha.
I was such like, a huge swerve.
I but was stunned.
You know what's funny is... by the time we get back to the explanation of how that happened, I had forgotten that's where we were going.
Yes.
I was like, oh my God, yes.
Wait a minute.
We had to explain how she got your shaved head and in this, you know, concrete background.
Right.
I'd even forgotten that we needed to pay off that swerve because there's so much shit that happened in the meantime.
All the stuff with Chip I thought was really great. I think
Sarandon is so... That whole sequence where she's like paying off the boys to set fire to the house. Dude. Oh, so funny.
Yeah, she's great as well. But what that actor pulls off in season four, I think is really worth praising because he needs to be an evil dude that you are okay spending like, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 episodes with. Like,
sure. Yeah.
Well, he's pulling a long form Kathy Bates in Misery.
Yeah.
Cole Escola is the name of the actor. And exactly right. Kathy Bates, you know, that was an awesome performance. And I think this is, I don't know that this is like up there, but it's really, really impressive because it's easy to make a character like the one he plays completely unsympathetic, like to make you just hate that guy. And really he comes off as quite tragic, I think.
Pretty tragic. And also the thing with his whole family and just like the sheer, like when the show goes into just pure lunacy, I feel like the whole like Willy Wonka, like candy factory and his parents and like the okay, now we're in like the realm of the super rich apparently. Yeah. And like they have all this power in the world. It works within the confines of the show. I'll tell you guys, I think the one moment that truly floored me in season four though, is the like late revelation that Dory got out. She got out of the truck.
That's the biggest question I wanted to ask you guys.
Yeah.
Is because the entire process of that episode was my wife and I turning to each other and going, did they kill her? Did they kill her?
Yeah.
It's like, I would not put it past this show to do anything. Like, I bought that she was dead. Completely bought she was dead. I mean, that sequence where you see all the versions of her come and sit at her own funeral and like, I was like, if there's one show where they would kill off the main character, it would be this one. And they're going to figure it.
Before you even get there, Jeff, like I will say, I'm talking about she got out of the car.
Yeah.
She
has this vision. Yeah. She has this flashback where she was able to escape from Chip and then decided back not in. To.
Yeah.
And it was like, so that really good. Just big, recontextualizes the entire season.
Yes.
Like, oh,
100%.
My God.
Agreed. That was a great moment. But Jeff, I was annoyed by the ending.
Really?
I didn't want to at least see it. I didn't want to know that she survived by the end of the episode, at least. But
I think they did the right thing in reveal, because if they revealed in the next episode that she had survived, I would be even madder. But I was annoyed because it felt like a way for the show to have its cake and eat it too. It's like, we're going to show you the whole funeral, and also, by the way, she's not dead.
Also, it's your favorite thing. It's your favorite thing of the funeral while she's alive.
But it just felt like if that was a vision of the funeral, like it wouldn't have played out quite so literal, in my opinion. Like, yes, you see four versions of her in the thing, but it's like everything is so detailed and, you know, how they hang out afterwards and eat the food. And it's just, it doesn't feel like a vision of a funeral. It feels like we're actually filming the funeral. And, you know, that irritated me, but I understand if it worked for you.
Wait. So specifically, you didn't buy the funeral? What?
No. I just didn't want
her to be alive. You thought it was too far to convince us she was dead and then pull back from
exactly
that.
Exactly right. Like you can kill. Obviously, killing her off is like super bold, and you know, if you want to do that, you know, all hats off. If you want to have her be alive and have her have a vision of a funeral, that's also fine. But having it be like a whole episode long vision that's like super, it's not like there is nothing except, you know, her showing up in four forms to indicate that it is like a vision, like a before death vision. Even when the Sopranos had the gall to do a dream sequence, they would like make it clear that it was a dream, you know? I didn't love the ending. Didn't love the ending.
I just liked it because at that point, having watched four seasons of that show, I just was so on the page of anything is possible here that I felt like they had earned it, right? They had earned yanking me around and doing the swerves. And, you know, at a certain point you go like, okay, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on me. But I also felt like I've been fooled so many times that are they doing that again? It was just a fun, am I actually believing what I'm seeing? And they went so far with it that they really did convince me again. Like they figured out a way to get me again. And I just was like, hats off to that, because I was like, no, I believe it. She's dead. This show would do it. They did do it. I don't know what they're going to do next. This is crazy. I was like, is the next season going to be literally her haunting the three of them? Like, is her ghost going to haunt them? This show could go anywhere. I don't know. And so because I had felt that, because they got me that far and the way they pulled back from it, like so dramatically, I just felt like, wow, they did it again.
I don't know. I think those are... You're describing what, for me, not necessarily for you, but for me, are like cheap thrills. Like, I think when the show like shows you something in the reality of the show and then it cuts back and it's like a dream sequence, right? Like, yeah. I feel cheated, you know, when something like that happens.
Sure.
It's fine to do it like a couple times. Mm-hmm. It's fine to do it like, you know, 2-3 times or whatever. But it seems like the show does it a lot. Example, like when Dory starts choking a juror. In season 3, and it's like, oh wow, like I wonder who she's actually choking, but nope, she's just dreaming up the whole thing. And it's like, it's easy to show something and then say, whoop, that didn't happen. Like, I think that's it feels cheap to me. What I agree with you though, that the things that the show does and builds into its reality, like for instance the neighbor having a twin sister, like that feels completely earned to me. Like, I have no issue with how it did any of that. But when it just shows you something filmed as though it's in the reality show and then yanks it away, I'm like, it's like a jump scare. It's like, okay, I feel like anyone can do this. You know, like anyone, it doesn't take skill to do this. It takes skill to do a lot of other things the show does, though.
Though, like when they do that, the show, like the other parts of the show kind of are so wild where it's like, I could believe her actually just running over and choking out a juror, right? And where do we go from here?
Exactly right. Yeah. But that's the thing, is like, that's why
you think it's cheap. Yeah.
Right. Because the show actually will do that stuff. And I admire the show for actually doing that stuff. So when it fakes you out like that, I don't like that. But there is, you know, like, another example of like the show going there is Drew trying to convince his coworker that his boss is fucking his coworker's wife.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like an extended sequence.
Oh,
and then,
my God.
Just like so. This is what's so brilliant about the show, is it makes me cringe into my body until I want to like shrivel up and like leave my soul wants to exit my body. Most of the stuff is involving Drew, by the way. Like, so
what about when the princess
shows up and like, when you know,
God.
And it's just like, you know, you know as a viewer what is going to happen. Like, you know where this is going, and it's so good.
She got his family to do it.
It's excruciating. It is the most excruciating. And again, that is like completely earned. It's like you set it up and you teed it all up, and it's just like, you earned this show. You earned this. You earned making me feel like I want to leave this planet, you know, or walk into the sea. That scene alone is just,
it's
so good.
It's so painful.
I do love how the final season becomes the Drew, Elliot, and Portia show, and where like they're so angry about Dory, they end up having like their little three-way kiss, which was apparently wasn't even scripted. That was just like a thing.
Funny.
They were like doing the lines, and in an interview I read, I believe the director at the time was just like, "How do you guys feel about this? Because this energy is right here, right now." And I kind of love like that. That's the season of them just being, you know.
I thought it was going to be like an Itu Mama Tambien kind of moment, but it never really went there. I season 4 probably my favorite, just in terms of like what he was trying to do and how much of it actually accomplished. Speaking of reversals, love the reversal of... You already talked about the scene, but like showing up and then it's this old guy, and then you're like, wow, how embarrassing. And that was already a shock. I'm like, wow, the show led you to, this is, by the way, another thing that I felt completely earned, right? The show makes you believe that this kid on the wrapper is Chip. And then right, you get there right. and it's like, it's an old guy. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, wow. What an amazing reveal. Sure. Only to then reverse
five minutes
that reveal
of internet searching.
Five yeah. minutes reveal. Later. I'm just like, bravo show. Like it's it. Yeah. That stuff is all amazing. You know?
Well, it also kind of shows like how they're very bad investigators at times. You know, it's well, like, well, Elliot, guys, why are they giving you a tour of the candy factory when you just like revealed something horrific, potentially horrific about, you know, their logo model? Nobody like caught on to the weirdness of that situation. They just kind of all went for it initially.
Yeah.
Well, Elliot did eventually catch on, so that was good.
Sure.
But yeah.
So good. It's so good. It's like, it's not, there's nothing else like it really. It's just, mm-hmm. it's so bonkers, but also compelling. My wife loves the mystery of it. She's so convinced that that cult is going to come back in a huge way.
Oh, she keeps saying the cult.
It's the cult. And I'm like, baby, I thought cult was a one-time joke. And she's like, no, it's coming back. Yeah. I know it.
You introduce cult. A whole cult. And it's like, you can't just. Yeah. It's Schrodinger's cult. Is that? No. Yeah. It's the other.
Chekhov's cult.
Got to do something with that cult.
Curious what you guys thought of like Ron Livingston's character. I mean, you talked about how the show made you feel for him. I mean, like first of all, dude has aged really well. I have to
say, he's beautiful still.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I'm
he's
curious.
Gonna play the Flash's dad now.
Yeah. Yeah. He's over 50. He looks looks great. I mean, he's kind of the guy who obviously like his presence looms large over the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, curious if you had any thoughts on like Ron Livingston. Do you like what he was doing? My favorite part of him of that character was when Dory kind of has sex with him, and then like later he's like right afterwards he starts screaming into his phone, and it just captures this feeling of not that I it's a feeling I would ever understand of kind of being with someone and then like or sleeping with someone and then like you find out something really unfortunate about them.
Yeah, you know, you don't know what you got into.
You don't know what you. Yeah, it's spiraling out of your control as time goes on.
Yeah. And you find out he has got a kid in that moment. It's like, oh fuck.
And he has like anger issues. Clearly.
Yeah.
No, so I love the way he played that character and the final reveal and everything. But I'm a big Ron Livingston fan. I've always liked his work, and I think this really gets to. This lets him like be a little more creepy, you know, than he has
menacing.
Been.
He's quite menacing in this in this show. So any other things you guys want to discuss about the show?
Oh man, I could go on and on. I feel like every moment of the show, you know, there's so many great like even the fact that the setup in season one of the neighbor being loud and then being annoyed how they can hear everything. And then that comes back because they were loud. So she hears them talking about a murder. Like
guys,
just in, that in, is genius.
In the middle of watching that season, by the way, I was just like, I think I dreamed this. I was like, obviously the neighbor heard them. Obviously like the neighbor hears what's going on. Cause they're just shouting everything that's happening. It's like, there's no way they're going to pay that off though. Right. Of course they do. Of course.
I love the scene where she, first of all, her murdering of the neighbor, I have to say, is like actually very understandable.
sure. What else are you gonna do?
Yeah,
you gotta protect like, your friends.
It reminded me of another
actress,
scene.
That actress is really quite good, dude. I like, there are moments where, you know, when she's like seducing Drew, you're just like, what? And then she's like hideous. And then she plays the twin who's just kind of crazy. It's so wild. It's so cool.
I don't remember. I'm trying to think of what show it reminds me of, but basically like the actor, she gives a speech of like, I'm going to haunt you forever. Like you're never going to be rid of me. And that's when Dory makes a decision like, hey, I have very little to lose from murdering.
Sure.
You know, there's another scene like it where someone's giving a speech and then it drives someone to kill him. I don't remember which one, but anyway, if you know, let me know in the comments of the Patreon post. But
and we're all just waiting for that body to come up at some point, right?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's going to be sticky.
Mm. Yeah.
How are the kids going to get out of this one?
Right.
I don't know.
But I love how Dory concocts a plan to get the tape out of the evidence locker. Like, it's this kind of elaborate plan, and then she just like rips into that tape. It's pretty plausible. It's pretty plausible to me that like,
what about the judge who has to eat constantly? Is that snack all the time?
Okay, so that here's the thing, Jeff. We've talked about this in the past of what was it? How do we talk? This came up with a movie we were discussing, and it was like, because there was a movie that, oh, it was I remember now. It was, I think it was The Visit, the M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Yeah.
Right. And like, so very minor spoilers for M. Night Shyamalan movie, The Visit, right? This is the one with the old people in it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Or the one particular old person.
Oh, or maybe it was one of those other... It was an M. Night Shyamalan film where it was like... There was... One of the characters had like a condition, right? And I think it was Split, actually. It was Split. And the main character in Split has like multiple personality disorder. And I think I had made the comment of like... I think movies like this contribute to stigmatizing like this mental illness. Mm-hmm. And you said... exasperatedly, you know, I think if they just hadn't called it that, you wouldn't have a problem with it. And the answer, I was like, yeah, I think you're right, Jeff. I think you're right about that. The thing is, the disease that guy, the judge, has is actually based off of a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually really not funny in real life, because basically,
well, I'm sure it isn't, but it's but it's not making fun of the disease. It's making fun of like his little
situation
that he sets up.
But his snacks are delightful. To everybody. So
that's the funny part is they're in a fucking murder trial, and he's got like delightful little containers, Tupperware, with those little like celery sticks, and it's so funny. It's not making fun of his disease at all. I mean, I don't even know. Well, I couldn't tell you what the disease was.
Here's what I'm going to say about it is I'm actually grateful that they came up with like a fake name for the disease. So, so this is, I'm basically saying you were right from like 2 to 3 years ago whenever Split came out, Jeff, is if they just made up a name for the disease. But for those who don't know, the real life thing is called Prader-Willi syndrome. That this thing that he has is based off of. And it's basically a disease where you can never feel like you've eaten enough. So it's quite sad in real life. But anyway, point being, I think it's nice that they made up a fake thing and they're kind of making fun of the fake thing. And they were at least thoughtful enough to do that. So
I just don't think the butt of the joke is ever the disease. It's the ridiculousness of a judge having to like chomp on things during a murder trial. I mean,
That's fair. But anyway, I just think it's fascinating. And by the way, the show makes up names for everything too. That's another thing is Babyfoot, Massachusetts, not a real place, by the way.
Right.
And I just,
you would know. Yeah.
It's fascinating whenever a show does that, you know, that they like.
It's so funny how they all have to go to Babyfoot. Babyfoot.
Get the plane. I'm going to Babyfoot.
What a name. Babyfoot.
It is really. Yeah, it's funny. I want to know what was behind the decision to do that, though. You know what I mean? Like, why make up a fake name as opposed to a real town? Right. Like. I'm just so curious. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
I think it's because it's a bunch of the state people and it's all just fucking absurd humor that I love. You know, it's just that those brains go to the, because Babyfoot is fucking funny, but it goes by and nobody makes it into a joke. And you have to, it's one of those things that's happening right now where you think back on it, and you go, fuck, Babyfoot is really funny name for a place. Who would name a place Babyfoot? That's great.
I mean, so great. We haven't talked about Anne Dowd in season 4, and I was a little shocked. She was out so quickly, to be honest. Like,
first of all, she's playing the complete opposite character of who she is in either The Leftovers or Handmaid's Tale, right? So just a lot of range Anne Dowd has. But also, yeah, the scenes with her were very much filmed like a horror film, like with her kind of slowly crawling out of the thing and suffocating to death. The show went to some dark places.
Yeah.
But this, that's the thing about the show that I think is really great is the tone is all over the place. And sometimes that tone works really well. And sometimes it doesn't. But like, it's just, it's, it goes there. Like, she gives this massive speech about all the things she's not allowed to eat.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious. It's just hilarious the way she does it. She does it so matter-of-factly. But then she dies horrifically, I think, later in that episode.
Yeah.
So it's that whiplash that the show gives you that I think is really something you don't really get anywhere else. Yeah?
I want to call out another moment that it just tickles the shit out of me. Mm-hmm. There's a scene in season one where Drew is at his horrible job and he's in an excruciating, like, all hands meeting.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Where someone is giving just the worst, you know, most boring, banal, endless, you know, corporate speech. And he's in the back, like, on his phone. But in the foreground is Michael Showalter, who is just enraptured by the meeting. just completely eating it up, loving every second of the meeting. And it just that is so funny to me that he's just like, yes, this, like, no human being would endure this bullshit meeting with joy. And yet here's this character in the foreground of the scene, just loving it while Drew is in the back on his phone. Oh, dude, so funny to me. So funny.
I like how evocative the show is. You know, you talk about, like, we've all been in that meeting at work, and it's very much something we recognize. We have a lot of emotions associated with. Another random thing was I liked the payoff of the candy bar that Chip is looking for in season four.
And he's like, I know, it's so great.
He's like, yeah.
The one with the hole in it.
Yeah. Do you sell a candy bar that has a hole in it? You know, it's kind of large and wide enough to support a freestanding hole. And it's such a specific.
Weren't you like racking your brain to think of that, like, actual thing?
Is it like
thing
100
or
grand? Or like, what is he talking about? You know, like, what is he talking about?
It's so good.
And
so good.
And then it's like answered for. It's, yeah. And it's because
his mom made it every time. Because that was the only way she could tell him that she loved him.
It's also kind of incredible
his
how
aunt
horny
is his mom.
Yeah. How horny Susan Sarandon is for her brother in the show. It's just like
very
wow.
Strange. Very strange. She also, like, even her talking to those the teenagers, I'm like, Susan Sarandon, calm down. You're just like
Susan Sarandon can't turn it off, dude.
She's just like, yeah, always.
I hate your politics, but I love your acting. That's kind of how I feel about Susan Sarandon.
It goes pretty much like full Chinatown, you know. By the end, like, it is like, yeah, I'm your mother, I'm your sister. Yeah. Ooh.
What do you guys think is going to happen in season four or season five? I should say, like, where do you want to see the story go in season five?
Well, what do we leave off exactly? Refresh my memory.
Well, I think, as far as I can tell, nothing that happened in the final episode actually happened for real. Right, like,
except
that was
for
all
Dory
a vision
getting out,
except for Dory getting out of the thing,
right?
Because she obviously, if they find her body, then the friends are not going to have a funeral about it,
right?
So I think we had left of her dying in the fire, and then she wakes, and then I think the friends were about to, like, leave Dory and go home. Was my sense? Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Like, that was the last thing they were going to do. So I'm so curious,
man.
Like, where is this even going to go? Like, but that's one of the things that's great about the show is you have no idea where it's going to go next.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm curious if you guys have any thoughts on where it's going to go or what would you like to see in the next season?
I'm still reeling from the finale, to be honest. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff that the show has to reckon with. And I think we've been kind of pussyfooting around the idea of a sense of self and everything for Dory and for everybody. And she has spent a whole season just running away from herself. So I hope, like, we get some good character progress. That's all I hope for. I don't want to, like, waste time. I do hate, like, when shows like this just start to meander. I want the show to stay as sharp as it can. So hopefully I don't know if they're planning to be done in two seasons, but I hope it is just two more seasons and they finish it.
Right. Hopefully she kind of develops a little bit more as a character. That would be nice.
Do you want to see them redeemed in some way that they discover their own flaws and become better people, or do you want to see them punished in some way?
I don't need to see that.
The thing that's interesting about the show is I think they're too relatable to be total sociopaths. Mm-hmm. Like, you compare these to other gangs of four, like It's Always Sunny or Seinfeld. And those exactly. people are like far exactly. more irredeemable, right? Like, but I actually think that these people have like emotions and stuff. What'd you say?
I said, I'm not sure about that. Yeah, I don't know if they're, I would suggest they're equally irredeemable. I mean, they've done horrible things. all of them. Like there's no, even Drew, who I think is sort of,
right.
at least the only one that was like, we should go to the cops. I don't like this. I don't like the lying. Even he is despicable, you know, does yeah. terrible things.
Yeah, he uses that princess woman. That's really sad.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that he was willing to completely ruin this dude's marriage just to be able to get to a non-extradition country, it's like...
Yeah, that's pretty... It's
terrible. It's
pretty bad.
Terrible.
It's pretty bad.
Oh, dude, and his move, like, straight to the airplane after he tells Dory he loves her, right? Like, as they are awaiting the trial, like, oh...
That scene where they pull him into the office and they're like, did you insinuate that? It's so funny, man. Oh, God damn.
So you think they're irredeemable and it's not interesting to see them redeemed. I can buy that argument. I can buy that argument.
I don't know what I feel like we've already seen the ultimate punishment visit them and then be squirmed out of. So I don't know how, if the end game here is to sort of see them punished for their misdeeds, I don't know how you pull that off at this point either. So I don't know. I don't know what an end game is for these characters. Another thing I want to bring up too, this, cause it tickles me, this season two, I think, Elliot's total breakdown where he starts losing his hair. and gets the rash, and he just starts wearing hats all the time because he's losing his hair. Dude, oh God, so brilliant and so funny. And we haven't even talked about him like on the right wing talk show and then asking him to completely change everything he believes. It's just, there's so much brilliance in this show, man.
Well, also,
there's
so the whole much. Chantal episode in season four, I thought was incredible. Like it was
brilliantly executed.
Rube Goldberg machine.
Wait, which one?
The one where Chantal like gets on that show, the Oprah like show.
Oh yeah,
she writes her book.
She writes her book, and then you find out it's the same book that like knocked out Elliot's co-star, and also like they hold this search to find the girl that wrote the book, and
the 10-year-old girl.
Wow, they actually went there. They went to all that trouble to do that whole setup, all to pay it off. With like waking Dory up with the honestly myself line. I'm just like, I literally like after I watch it, I'm like, I'm gonna watch that again because that was so brilliant. Like it's that's so how brilliant. I felt about it.
The whole thing with her family too, just like how they've fallen from being this crazy rich family, you know, like just obscenely rich every time we've seen them to eating chicken nuggets, I think. And just like the sad like acceptance they've had over that and Chantal not having any of it, I thought was just hilarious, but I also like to see them feel
the character that's the husband to the sister who's just like constantly trying to step up and be the man of the family. It's so funny.
He's currently trying to exceed the limits of human creativity by microdosing.
Ah, shit, dude. I'm so glad we're doing this. I know this has just turned into me being Chris Farley and the like, you remember that part? That was awesome. You know, that guy. But I just love stepping back through this show. It's such an entertaining show, man.
It's so good. I'm so glad smart. It stuck around. I'm glad it didn't like die on the vine on TBS, which a lot of good stuff on random other networks that aren't the major ones tend to. And
I'm sorry is a great example of that. It just got canceled after two seasons on True TV. It was, that show's really fun too.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys, I think we can wrap it up there. Those are random assorted thoughts on Search Party, but it was pretty great overall. Pretty great.
I'm really glad all three of us liked it because
otherwise usually this would be the one where over here.
Yeah. This would be the one where Dave would be like, nah, I don't know, guys.
Well, I think I had more problems with it than you guys, but
yeah, certainly more problems. But I think overall, it is on the level of Breaking Bad, and clearly Dave does not.
Before we go, real quick, Dave, I know you are a massive Arrested Development fan.
Yes.
And I think when I first talked about it on the show, I mentioned it in the context of sort of like a show that would never have existed without Arrested Development. It's kind of the, you know, it has DNA of Arrested Development in it. Do you see that? How do you compare it to Arrested Development? What are your feelings there?
Well, first of all, I do think that Aaliyah Shawkat really is a better actor in this show than she was in Arrested Development.
No, like, absolutely.
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, she's a kid too.
Yeah, she's a kid at the time, and she was going up against like giants of acting, and I think she didn't compare favorably. Here, she really is able to strut her stuff and go to extremely dark places. Like that last scene in, I think, episode 9 of season 4, where she's like begging Chip to like hypnotize her again.
Yeah,
is really impressive work. Like, genuinely,
we haven't said enough about how good of a performance she gives over the course of the whole show. Yeah, I agree.
Yep. It's good. It's scary. It's scary.
It's scary. You're like her transformation in season 3, like where she just basically starts tapping into her dark side, right?
Yeah.
And bits of season 2 is just, it is scary. And the way she handles the press, her little smile, her smile during the arrest, like, oof.
So
like
good.
There's a lot going on, and it makes me appreciate her more. Like, she as an actor, she's been doing all sorts of stuff. She was in Transparent, you know, she's been pushing herself too. So I truly appreciate that.
I think where I would compare this to Arrested Development is the kind of offhanded references that Arrested Development would do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a character would say, like, it's time for us to seal the deal. And a character says, holy shit, my seal deal. I forgot about it because I'm a seal dealer. I buy and sell seals. You know, like, wow, real, like, you know, the show actually went there. And that's kind of how the show feels. Like, it has that kind of DNA where, like, an offhanded reference that someone will make, it'll say, like, nope, that's actually a thing. We're going to take that and run with it to its conclusion, you know?
Maybe is the name of the character forever because of one joke. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but it also has that like puzzle box feel. We've alluded to a number of those episodes where everything kind of clicks together in this beautiful way you did not see coming. And I think Arrested Development really did that brilliantly often too. You know, Hermano and all that's, you know, like by the end, you're like, oh my God, all that was setting up this.
I think, I don't know. Breaking Bad, probably my top 5 shows of all time. Arrested Development, you know, probably one of my favorite comedies of all time. I just don't think it's quite up there. I don't don't think it's quite like operating at that level as consistently as the Arrested Development seasons 1 through 3 were.
Yeah.
And seasons 4 and 5 I thought were pretty rough, to be honest
pretty
with
rough.
You, you know?
Yeah. I don't think Breaking Bad was super consistent either. To be honest, so I
gotta agree to disagree on that one, but that's it's okay.
I don't know if I'm gonna agree with that one either, Devendra. I think Breaking Bad's pretty brilliant from start to finish.
Exactly. Might have been like 1 or 2 episodes in the whole thing.
The finale.
Love the finale.
I think they're straight up. Anyway, that's a whole different discussion.
So I don't think doesn't quite reach those heights, but it's still like a very, you know, I don't binge that many shows these days, right? And so this is a show that I'm like, I want to keep finding what happened. There are some episodes that really kind of stretch my patience, that really were like, we already saw this. Like, we don't need to like rehash all this again. But there were enough moments of, wow, like what a brilliant setup and payoff that. So I would say this is much more inconsistent than Arrested Development was, in my opinion. But, you know.
Yeah. No, I also think Arrested Development is a superior show, except for seasons 4 and 5, which are really, I wish I could erase in the
really,
way that
really
I wish.
Really killing the average there.
Yeah, I wish I could erase it in the same way I wish I could erase, you know, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. You know, that's how I feel about them. But I'm not saying it's in that stratosphere, but I feel like it is. It's the kind of thing where I could say, if you love Arrested Development, I think you're going to love Search Party. That's what I mean.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. As long as people don't think it's the same, you know, in terms
very different show. Very different tonally, too.
Yeah. Anyway, brilliant show. Worth watching. I'm looking forward to season 5. Thanks for chatting about it, folks.
Yeah.
And thanks again. Patreon.com/filmpodcast for making it happen. Hope you enjoyed this chat. Check out Search Party on HBO Max. We'll see you next week for Godzilla vs. Kong.